We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Into a Tuesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen here with Alex Warusa. Alex, we are nearing the conclusion of several round one series. The Philadelphia 76ers remain the only team that is safely through to round two, but we have three games tonight. We get Timberwolves Nuggets, Clippers Suns, and Hawks Celtics. All three of those could spell the end of the series. All three road teams in these series are major favorites tonight. We'll dive in to all three of those games. We will talk a little bit about the Bucks Heat and Grizzlies Lakers games from last night, but I want to start with the Most Improved Player award. You know, you and I have been tracking this one along with the other awards throughout the season, and you know, I was kind of a firm believer that there was some value on betting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander late in the season when he was like 2 or 3 to 1. You know, Laurie Markkanen had emerged as a fairly heavy favorite. And if you're listening to this, Laurie Markkanen won the award officially yesterday, and it wasn't all that close. You know, SGA, a decent second place finish, but it was a 69-24 in terms of first place votes in favor of Markkanen. I thought more voters would be swayed by OKC, you know, making the play-in, SGA being a big reason for that. But, you know, it went with the more traditional, you know, most improved player trajectory in Markkanen, a guy who went from, you know, someone who was a role player at best, you know, a kind of a lottery bust to an all-star and likely an all-NBA player.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, Markkanen went from like fourth guy on offense, fifth guy on offense, depending on how you want to look at it, to number one guy for a team that before this decided to pull the rug out from Utah, looked like they might sneak into the play-in. But both of these teams and both of these guys were surprising. I think they deserve the award for different reasons, but I feel like Markkanen is the more traditional winner of the award because he more so came out of nowhere, relatively speaking.
He really did. And, you know, we've seen this kind of trajectory for winners of this award in the past, but I mean, this feels even more extreme than some of the guys who've won it recently. You know, last year was Ja Morant. That to me was actually closer to the SGA you know, case where he went from very good player to superstar. And it kind of feels like that's what happened with SGA this year. You know, prior to that, it was Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Pascal Siakam, Victor Oladipo, Giannis, McCollum, and Jimmy Butler. I don't feel like any of those guys were like, none of those guys' stock was as low as Laurie Markkanen's was coming into this season.
No, I don't think so. A lot of times it's just a guy who makes kind of, like, the guy has been making steady improvement anyway, and either just gets put in a bigger role or he makes a lot of strides off season, whether it be playmaking or shooting. But Markkanen's stock was like trending down. This is almost like, it's not like comeback player of the year, but it's more of like Markkanen kind of saved his career with this, right? More so than SGA.
No, you're right. You're totally right. I mean, I was initially going to say it felt like he like might be on his way out of the league, and maybe that's a little too extreme, but it wouldn't have been completely shocking if, you know, if this season had played out differently and all of a sudden 2 years from now, Lauri Markkanen is like, you know, playing for Real Madrid, kind of like the Nikola Mirotic. That's what I'm trying to think of, the Nikola Mirotic path.
I was just about to use that exact comp. Yeah, I felt like I was always relatively high on Markkanen, but I wasn't expecting quite this, which I think was borne out in the fact that I didn't get him anywhere in fantasy, even though I thought he was going to have a great year. I feel like this got predicted more so by like people playing fantasy than it did people in real life, like analysts, because it was hard to get Markkanen at like what you would consider to be a low risk value in drafts. But he had an amazing season.
I think even Markkanen's biggest supporters were not saying he'll average almost 26 points per game, 8.5 rebounds, 2 assists. Really didn't do a ton defensively. That's kind of the only hole in his fantasy profile. But 3 3-pointers per game, 50% from the field, 88% from the line on like double the attempts that he's ever had in any season in his career. Well-deserved for sure. I did think it would be a little bit closer between he and SGA, but certainly not going to fault anybody who voted for Lauri Markkanen. And as you alluded to, like, the Jazz could have made the play-in if they wanted to, and maybe that was in the mind of some voters as well.
It could have been. When Markkanen played, they were 32-34.
Honestly, that's worse than I would have guessed. I would have thought they were a 500 team. I thought you were going to say they were like, I don't know, like 40-15 or something.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of those games where like Mike Conley was out as well. They lost a ton of games during that stretch where it was like Colin Sexton was seeing a bunch of minutes. But I think I think 32-34 is pretty good if you're like Lauri Markkanen is our number one guy and the sort of guy we expected to be our number two guy in a way in Colin Sexton. I mean, maybe they didn't expect that as much as we expected it. He didn't do that much. I think 32-34 is solid.
To put a bow on the most improved player voting, in order, Markkanen, SGA, Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, and Nicholas Claxton. Those are the top five. Other players receiving at least one vote: Tyrese Haliburton, Trey Murphy, Kevon Looney, De'Aaron Fox, Austin Reeves, Jaren Jackson, Aaron Gordon, and Malik Monk.
That lone Looney vote is kind of crazy. I think Looney's proving his worth this playoffs. I think we were talking before the podcast, Reeves got 2 third-place votes. I actually feel like he could have gotten more. Not that he improved more than Brunson did, who took third, but I think it's easy to forget that Reeves was playing like 24 minutes a game last season, 23 minutes a game, averaged 7 points a game. He basically has doubled almost like his points and his assists from last season, and he's only playing 5 more minutes a game. And obviously, his percentages are great, so I feel like he should have gotten more love than he did, but you know, when you only, as a voter, when you only have 3 slots, it's tough to give, you know, those guys love.
I do think if the vote took place like today instead of 2 or 3 weeks ago, then, you know, Reeves probably, it's not like he's going to win the award, but maybe he's in the top five because he's had, you know, a couple memorable performances in these playoffs already. But you're totally right. Is there anybody who comes to mind? And I apologize, I didn't prepare you for this. So, I'll give you a couple seconds to think. Is there like an early candidate for next year, like somebody you think is kind of in that prime position to take a big leap?
Early candidate for next year,
I feel like I always look at like, all right, who's going into like their 3rd or 4th year, you know, what young player, it's like kind of thinking of like the Jalen Green type of trajectory, but didn't necessarily have that second step in year 2, could still be there. I don't know, Evan Mobley, I think is one of those guys who's Mobley. Maybe in that mold.
I think Mobley is a good call. You know, I feel like some of these teams that are a little more jumbled at the bottom, there could be some candidates on there as well. I mean, I think Anthony Edwards could end up being a candidate if he kind of takes a full leap into stardom, but he might not have enough of a ceiling like to break through at this point. Like he's already averaging 25 a game. You know, he'd probably have to average like 29 points and like 6 assists, which maybe.
Guys typically don't win it in year 2. So like, as much as I would love to say like Jalen Williams or, you know, Paolo Banchero, it's certainly possible. Like if Banchero especially comes out and is like a 27 point per game guy next year, he'll be in the mix. But it's typically like that year 3 through 5 range is where guys tend to capitalize. Early 20s You usually don't get a ton of credit for making the year one to year two leap. I think like Tyrese Haliburton, if he played a full season, he feels like one of those guys who is not quite a superstar, but if he plays 75 games and averages like 21 and 12, he might be ready to kind of start knocking on that door.
Yeah, I think Haliburton got downgraded this year because we saw him do it at the end of last season when he got traded and he was putting up 20 and 10. And we're like, oh, okay, Haliburton is kind of who we thought he might be. And I feel like that coming into this season was like, well, has he really improved compared to then?
Yeah, I would say De'Aaron Fox as well. I mean, he was on the watch list this year. He might have raised his stock too much already in the postseason. Yeah. And we'll talk about the upcoming game five in that series. Actually, the name, if I had to bet on it right now, and I'm assuming that he sticks with this team next year, I think Mikal Bridges. Like, if we get a full season of what Mikal Bridges did for the last month and a half, I think he would have to lead the way.
I don't know how I didn't think of that. But yeah, Bridges, I mean, because he could, you know, I think some of his shooting was a little bit unsustainable. He cooled off later in the year, but it's pretty conceivable to me that he averages like 26 to 28 a game. If they keep giving him the keys and they're like, listen, just keep taking these mid-range jumpers, especially if they can figure out some stuff within the offense to like help him get some more assists. Just because I think how much time did Jacques Vaughn have to set up something where it's like, okay, we put Mikal Bridges in an opportunity to be a playmaker? I don't think so. And if he can get his skills numbers back up, that would be huge too.
The NBA regular season has come and gone, which means it's time for a new way to play daily fantasy basketball for the playoffs. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played. And they brought three new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. With unique games like Fantasy Bingo, head-to-head player challenges, and over-unders in Fantasy Book, Daily Fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. Again, that's play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use our code ROTOWIREMBA, all one word, ROTOWIREMBA. Use that at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step onto the court and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena.
All right, let's get into Bucks Heat. Anybody who listens to this pod is well aware of where we stand on this series and on one of the teams involved. Man, this felt like kind of a Pantheon Bucks loss. I stopped short of putting it on like the upper tier of Wisconsin sports losses, just because that's a very crowded discussion. And this did not end the series. And we'll get into that. I mean, there's still, to me, a pretty decent chance that Milwaukee can rally back and at least make this very interesting over the next few games here. But man, I think the lesson for me is that even with Giannis playing well, Brooke Lopez playing well, the Bucks really can't survive when both Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday have really, really bad games on both ends.
No, the Giannis-Lopez connection was amazing in this game. I mean, there's only so much you can realistically go to it. Maybe there was opportunities to go to it more, but you said it. I mean, Middleton goes 4-for-12 for 14 points. Holiday goes 6-for-19 for 14 points. Giannis, as good as he played, I loved his 13 assists. I always think Giannis is better when he's trying to pass more and trying to barrel through people a little bit less. He had 6 turnovers and had a bad turnover late, as did Holiday. It's tough, man. And playing Portis only 13 minutes, I feel like I think you just got to give more minutes to Portis. It's a tough loss. I mean, Butler was amazing. I mean, I don't even, we have to give credit to Butler. I mean, he was destroying the Bucks defense. I don't even know if it was anything necessarily the Bucks did wrong. I mean, maybe you could have tried doubling, but Budenholzer is extremely anti double team. He's extremely anti anything risky on defense. And Butler was just, he was out of control. This was absolutely like, he was hitting threes, which, you know, that's kind of random for him. But it just in terms of mid-range dominance, the pump fakes, the spin moves, he was unbelievable.
I thought Milwaukee once again, and this has been something that's kind of dogged them throughout their losses in the series, is they missed a ton of open threes, and they ended up finishing 13 of 40 from beyond the arc. They were actually, they were making some contested threes early on. You couldn't really complain too much about the shooting, but they went cold in the second half. I thought Joe Ingles gave them like 18 of the worst minutes I've seen from anybody this season, just killing them on the defensive end. He was a big reason that Miami was able to keep this within reason at the end of the first half. You know, had a couple really just boneheaded fouls late in this game, not really even attempting to play traditional defense. You know, Pat Connaughton, 1 of 6 from three. Bobby Portis, 1 of 4 from three. Jrue Holiday, 2 for 11 from three. I would say, I think there's a case to be made, Alex, that this was the single worst two-way game of Jrue Holiday's entire career. And I know that sounds like really hyperbolic, but I truly think, I mean, it's at the very least in that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, it's partially on him that Butler went off like this. I think
he fouled Butler on what, two or at least two, if not three, jump shots.
Yeah. And I still think some of this is on Budenholzer, where it's just like, oh, double Butler, what are they going to do? Like, how much is Gabe Vincent going to kill you? How much is Adebayo even going to kill you? You know, Lowry didn't have much of a game.
Butler. Yeah, like on the radio show this morning, James Anderson, you know, he's like, look, if they just hold Butler to 50 points, they win this game. And they couldn't even do that.
No. And I have a stat. Miami is 43 of 82 on contested threes in this series. That's 52%. The league average of the season was 33%. So they're basically up 20% on contested threes compared to the average team in the regular season. That's a ridiculous stat, but I also said on the XM show last night, the Heat and Bucks were number one and number two in wide open threes as well. So the Bucks are giving the Heat a bunch of wide open threes, and even the ones they contest, the Heat are making. So I think there's some regression to the mean coming. I mean, I think the Bucks are going to win the next game. I would be shocked if they didn't. But I think, again, if you're Milwaukee, if you're Bud, you got to do something drastic. You have to, like, you cannot let Butler do this to you again. You have to get the ball out of his hands.
I mean, the lack of in-game adjustments and even in-series adjustments, I think, is something that that was really the primary complaint with Bud before the Bucks won the title. And, you know, winning that championship 2 years ago, it felt like kind of absolved Budenholzer of his sins. But this felt like a reminder. You know, I saw a lot of, all right, if they lose this series, I think you really need to reevaluate Mike Budenholzer, because you know, in a lot of ways, he pushed the right buttons during that run in 2021. But, you know, Giannis also put up 50 in game six, to clinch that title. Like, it wasn't a tactician series necessarily. And I think you could argue that he's hurt them with his lack of adjustments in this one. And, you know, I mean, the other problem with Milwaukee is, you know, they have all this depth, but, you know, you have Jrue Holiday basically guarding Jimmy Butler for most of this game. He's giving up 3-4 inches defensively, and you know, nobody's more qualified than Jrue Holiday, but size-wise, it's not an ideal matchup. Jay Crowder did not even come off the bench. He played 0 minutes last night. Is this not why you got Jay Crowder?
No, this is why you got Jay Crowder, was a guy with the size to deal with guys like Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Those are exactly the guys the Bucks have had trouble with on the wing. You know, Middleton's slow. He's not a good defender anymore. You know, Holiday and Grayson Allen, those guys are too small. And yeah, this is why you have Jay Crowder. I know he's not the quickest guy ever, but you know, Giannis just isn't great for Butler either, because his lateral quickness is too slow. You know, you want him as a help side guy, but it's shocking that this would happen to you. Like, if you're a coach on the sideline, you see Butler doing this to you, and then you would not just like look down to your bench, see Jay Crowder, and be like, 4 minutes. Like, just play your ass off for 4 minutes and see what you can give me.
Yeah, really weird game rotationally. We didn't really see any of Javon Carter. Not that he's going to guard Jimmy Butler, but that just gives you another defensive-minded presence. That was the issue. Yeah, Milwaukee was generating good looks. I thought Giannis, for the most part, like, given the circumstances, Giannis played about as well as he possibly could have. You know, I think, you know, you and I were talking on the XM show about, well, you know, do you lean under on all of his props just in case he goes out there and you know, doesn't come back in the second half because he's dogged by that tailbone? That wasn't the case at all, man. I mean, Giannis gave you a 26, 13, and 10. And, you know, it really felt like Middleton and Holiday kind of lost this game for Milwaukee. I mean, the Holiday shot selection, the turnovers at the end of this game were criminal. To me, it was an alarming performance by Chris Middleton, and one that I think it kind of calls into question, like, all right, what are we doing going forward? Because he has a $40 million player option for next season. And if I'm the Bucks, I mean, maybe things come around and you know they win the series and we feel differently in a month. But I don't know how you go to the negotiating table right now and start talking max extension with this version of Chris Middleton.
No, I mean, it's tough because I think generally speaking, if you are a title contending team, your third best player usually has leverage to get that max extension. And I don't always feel like it's a bad idea to give it to them because if you have three max guys and you're in title contention, isn't that kind of what we're doing here? But yeah, I mean, you know, Giannis has a bunch of kind of like most of the role guys in this team are aging a little bit. Holiday's getting up there. Middleton's getting up there. Lopez is really old. But Lopez had an amazing game. I don't think he's like washed or anything, obviously. But yeah, it could just be as simple as Middleton needs the offseason to get right again. And then he'll look like himself next year. But I don't know.
I mean, Lopez unrestricted this summer as well. That's a decision that they'll have to make. He is 35 at this point. So you're looking at his age 36 season next year for a big man that's had some injuries, foot and back injuries throughout his career. I think that they're going to have to do a total reevaluation. I mean, unless they hit the gas and blow through the East in a way that it just seems really unlikely is going to happen right now. I think this team has to maybe think about rebooting a little bit more quickly than they probably anticipated. On the other side of this, I don't really have a lot to say about Miami. You know, I thought Bam Adebayo played better than the 6 of 16 box score line would imply. I mean, there were a couple shots down the stretch that were like 95% of the way down that rattled out. I thought he was getting good looks. I mean, Milwaukee was really, really tempting him to take mid-range jumpers, get a running start. There's a miscommunication late in the game where, you know, it looked like Lopez and Giannis didn't quite know who was supposed to be checking Adebayo. He just gets a runway, goes in. I believe he got fouled and made both free throws. So, he hasn't had a fantastic series on paper, but I think he's very clearly been their second best player almost by default. The only other thing that really stands out, other than Butler, just with an all-time performance, is Duncan Robinson has reawoken.
This was the spot where Spoelstra had to dust him off and see what he could give the team. With Hero not there, he's just like, well, you know, he threw him in there in the game that Hero got hurt and it was fine. Keep it rolling. It was fine. Keep it rolling again. Shocking. I mean, we know he can hit threes. It's surprising because he wasn't really in the rotation this season. He was barely in the rotation, but on the other hand, you can't be surprised when Duncan Robinson comes in and goes 3 for 4 from three. That's ultimately what they paid him to do. And then you have to make sure to attack him on defense because that's why he's not playing in the first place.
He's 12 of 16 from three over the last three games. So you know, you talk about that regression coming at some point. You'd like to think maybe he's that guy, but you know, they've been good looks. And you know, Milwaukee defensively has just not been the same team over the last month. We've talked about it on the pod. We've talked about it on the XM show. It's a very basic stat to look at, but some of the point totals that they were giving up to bad teams at the end of the year, I mean, that should have been more of a red flag. And once again, you know, Miami, they didn't get to that magic 120 number this time, but I mean, this is now four games in a row where they have scored like way above anything they were doing during the regular season. And again, I get that the 3-point shooting is part of that, but it's also not like they're taking that many. You know, they only hit 13 threes in this game. They shot it at 41%. But we're seeing other teams, you know, the Warriors are launching like 50, 55 threes in some of these contests. So, it's been efficient shooting for Miami. It's been very, very timely. And, you know, I remain pretty convinced that Milwaukee is the better team. But, man, if they're not hitting their open threes, man, this offense breaks down really quickly.
It does. I mean, the Bucks have actually made more threes than the Heat in this series. But, yeah, I mean, the whole Bucks offense is driving kick. Giannis driving kick. Drew driving kick. Occasionally they run the Giannis pick and roll. I think that works too. But yeah, if the threes don't fall down, that's the root of a lot of Bucks losses.
Yeah, I mean, you live and die by the three in the modern NBA, and I think that's more true for some teams than others. It's definitely true for the Bucks. I mean, that is the offense at this point. But yeah, I've not much else to say about that game specifically. You know, if you look at the series prices over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, Miami's minus 150 to win the series. The Bucks are plus 125. So, I mean, that's an applied probability of like 40% that Milwaukee is able to storm back. And look, it seems very doom and gloom right now, but I'm with you. Like you said, I think Milwaukee probably wins game five at home. And then it kind of feels like the series will come down to that game six in Miami.
It's going to be tough for the Bucks to win three games against this Heat team in a row, obviously. I would not bank on it. I would not bet that.
I wouldn't bet it. It's not a good enough value, first of all. I mean, I would bet it at, like, if it was like 3-1, I would happily bet it because, I don't know. Miami is obviously a more formidable 8-seed opponent than you typically get. And I think Milwaukee is certainly guilty of probably taking this team a little bit too lightly. But we also saw Miami, you know, what, like 2 weeks ago, struggle to get past the Atlanta Hawks in a play-in game. Like, I'm not convinced that this team is like some different version of what we thought they were. I think Milwaukee is just playing way down to its competition right now. And you know, I also don't think you can discount Giannis basically missing the first three games of the series. Like, that absolutely matters. Milwaukee's not in this hole if Giannis doesn't get hurt in game one. So I'm not trying to make excuses necessarily, but I don't know that this is quite the historic collapse that some people in Milwaukee are making it out to be. And again, if they win game six in Miami, they're not losing game seven at home. So I don't think Milwaukee is out of this by any means.
No, they're not out of it. And you're right. Like, losing, not having Giannis available for two games is a huge portion of it. And if they lose the series, you're ultimately going to point to that. But again, even with this Heat team down Tyler Hero, I would not bank on them. I would not bet my money on the Bucks winning three games in a row against them.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So comparing and contrasting with the other game that we had last night, the LA Lakers, they're up 3-1 in their series. They too are the lower seeded team. They were also in the play-in. They're minus 1,000 to win this series. Memphis plus 650 to come back from a 3-1 deficit.
Well, I mean, if you're asking me between those four teams, what's the best value? I would honestly say it's the Grizzlies. But yeah, I mean, this, which is crazy. Because this game went into overtime because LeBron hit a pretty crazy layup off the top of the glass to keep this game going. Yeah. This series could have, you know, the Grizzlies could have easily won this game.
I expect the Lakers to come out flat and
yeah,
lose
me too.
Tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely.
I would bet significant money, and maybe I will, on the Lakers losing that game. They're 4-point underdogs for game five in Memphis. I mean, that's just, for one, it would, no matter what, it would be an obvious letdown spot for the Lakers. But on top of that, I mean, the workload concerns, I think, with only one day of rest between games is the bigger thing. I mean, Anthony Davis had two season-ending injury scares last night, one and a half. So we banked that one. He looked terrible, played 42 minutes. LeBron played 45 minutes. Austin Reeves played 42 minutes. You know, even guys like, you know, Schroeder, Troy Brown, Hachimura, they all played above what they normally do. Lakers didn't really extend their bench despite this game going into overtime. More than anything, though, I thought this was an extremely concerning game for LeBron. Extremely concerning for how he looked physically. I think it's the foot. I don't think he's just, you know, magically become old all of a sudden over the course of the last week. But I cannot remember a game with the stakes being what they were. You know, this was within, what, 5 to 7 points at most for basically the entire fourth quarter and overtime. And seeing LeBron James get over half court and just hand the ball off to Dennis Schroeder and go sit in the corner. I mean, it was jarring.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's tough because there are always those moments. We just talked about he had that crazy reverse alley-oop dunk the last game. And there are moments where you see him sprint all out and he looks completely fine. But, you know, a regular sprint is not the same as kind of slamming your feet on the ground and jumping and doing all these cuts and stuff like this. And I also think he's tired. He's 38 and he was out a long time, relatively speaking, with that foot. And it's keeping up with the cardio is tough. And you're asking him to play 45 minutes. That's pretty crazy.
Well, and he's a father of three as well. I think a lot of people forget that. So, you know, he's a father. I mean, it was interesting because he kind of salvaged the entire game with that layup and, you know, with the and one in overtime. He had a couple of huge rebounds in traffic. But like it felt weird that we were celebrating like a LeBron 22 and 20 game. It's like the rebounding was the highlight for LeBron James. You know, I mean, the 3-point shooting has been really disastrous for him of late as well. Really, since coming back, he struggled mightily from beyond the arc. I mean, he had 3 3-pointers in game one. Since then, he is 2 for 19 from beyond the arc. Like, that is a major problem. It was just really, really shocking to see him, you know, have Xavier Tillman switch out and just really not to get by him. You know, David Roddy, David Roddy is exactly the type of guy that a few years ago LeBron would have just abused in a playoff series. And, you know, Roddy blocked him at the rim a couple of times, knocked the ball away. Like, it was really weird. But then, like you said, you know, he'll throw down a reverse dunk in traffic, or, you know, he'll sky for a rebound and, you know, put it back for an and one. So, like, he's never limping. He's not grabbing at the foot. He's not wincing, but something is definitely off with him.
Yeah, I think it's those sort of he's always been like his best athleticism has always been like his downhill sort of speed. And so I think that's where we see it the least, the kind of decline. But where I think it really ends up showing is when he's close to the rim, you know, he can't rise up like he used to, just kind of like spur of the moment, just like, I'm going to try to rise up and dunk on somebody. He doesn't get up as quickly as he used to. And trying to turn the corner on guys or cross over and change direction, I think that's a lot of where we see it. I think that's kind of what goes first. But at the same time, Anthony Davis could not be giving you 12 points.
Oh my goodness.
On 13 shots against, again, like Xavier Tillman. And I know Triple J's on him a lot, and Triple J is a defensive player of the year, but AD's just got to be better.
It was such a weird game for AD. I mean, typically the Lakers lose these games where AD just can't do anything. You know, he did hit like a really tough long two that was big late in the fourth quarter, had a putback in overtime that you know, kind of saved the Lakers. But yeah, just a bizarre game overall. You know, one of those games where it just felt like he never had his balance on either end. You know, he's catching the ball inside with seemingly great position, and then somehow the possession ends with him like fading away out of bounds and falling into the cameras. You're like, how did this even physically turn out like this? I mean, Xavier Tillman's outplayed him, I think, offensively the last two games. And I mean, defensively, LeBron has struggled with Tillman as well. And he struggled with Jaren Jackson. I think those were the type of matchups that, you know, kind of in the prime of his career, it didn't really matter if it was a size disadvantage or a height disadvantage for LeBron. It was kind of that the strength and the veteran craftiness would allow him to survive. But I thought he gave up a lot of easy baskets around the rim to Jackson, Tillman, and Roddy, who I thought gave the Grizzlies some really good minutes.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of unbelievable that the only guy on the Grizzlies that scored more than 20 points was Desmond Bane, and they kept this game really close. Like, again, the takeaway is, you know, LeBron's layup, they're up 3-1, but I'm more concerned that the game was this close in the first place. Yeah. Like, it had to go to overtime. Well, like, to me,
they were up 15. They were up 15 right. early, and it looked like, okay, this is going to be a Lakers avalanche. Like, I was, you know, talking to a friend last night about this, who he had some like Lakers first quarter props going, and I'm like, the Lakers start like 4 out of 5 games 0-for-7 from the field. Like, no other team starts off as cold as the Lakers, and of course they did that again. But then they stormed back, they're up 15, and it felt like there were like a couple 3-pointers that rimmed out. It was like, man, if they hit one of those, that might have been the early death blow. And then of course, you know, Memphis went on a 14-1 run to close the second quarter and basically tie it. I think they were down 1 or 2 at the half. And the Lakers trailed for most of the second half and until D'Angelo Russell, you know, came through with an all-time bailout. I mean, he was playing horribly and then hit 3 big shots in a row to get the Lakers back into it. LeBron closed it out. Yeah, I'm with you, though. I didn't come away from this feeling like, all right, Lakers 3-1, baby. If anything, I think Golden State has to feel amazing about their chances to get to the West Finals. Oh, yeah. Like, I looked at the odds today. They're not nearly as good as you think, but I think the Warriors are going back to the final. I really do. I think you let Phoenix and Denver duke it out in the next round. And I think Golden State, as long as they stay healthy, I think they're going to rip through the Lakers.
I think so. Well, honestly, I mean, it's interesting because either team that comes out of that series, whether it be the Kings or the Warriors, play this extremely up-tempo style with a lot of dribble handoffs, and you have to chase a lot of guys around, and the Lakers are just not good at that. The Lakers are good at defending teams and playing against teams that are very traditional and don't run these hyper athletes off of screens and are jacking threes and all this stuff. And so I think either team that came out would have a really could make the Lakers look pretty bad. But I agree with you on the Warriors. I mean, I think they would beat the Lakers in a playoff series if it comes to that.
Yeah, I think they're getting a free pass in Sacramento with the Fox injury. You know, we'll see what he looks like tomorrow night. But, you know, you got to feel pretty good if you're Golden State. De'Aaron Fox is really the only constant that they've had in that series. And, yeah, if it's this version of LeBron in round two, the Lakers aren't beating the Warriors. It's just not happening. I mean, if he finds a way to get that foot to where it needs to be in, you know, a week and a half from now, then we'll have ourselves a series. But, I mean, LeBron just clearly being, you know, out of it, not that, you know, not wanting the ball in these final possessions, to me, that says just about everything. So, yes, in summary, Lakers somewhat lucky to be up 3-1. They will lose in game 5 and then, you know, maybe close it out at home in game 6 and get a couple of days of rest before that likely showdown with the Warriors. Let's get to the 3 games tonight, and we'll just do quick previews here, you know, given that we'll only have a few hours before these games tip off. You can hear full live previews on NBA radio from 6 to 6:30 p.m. Central. Tonight, we'll be previewing all 3 of these games from a betting perspective on the RotoWire NBA show. Hawks Celtics. This is in like my top 3 first round series that I've cared the least about in my entire life. Boston should be fine tonight. They're 13-point favorites. No DeJounte Murray, suspended for the bump referee.
The bump. Yeah, it was crazy. I saw the video. It was the way the ref looked at DeJounte Murray after it happened. I was like, what did he say to that guy? But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this has kind of been a nothing series. I'm not surprised that Atlanta won game 3. They were shooting so badly from 3, and it's like, well, if it's going to get better, it's going to get better in game 3, and that's what happened. And yeah, without DeJounte Murray, it's I think having the Celtics as 13-point favorites, maybe that's a little heavy, but I would expect them to win this game.
I think they'll be fine. And I just realized that I misspoke at the start of the pod. I was looking at the Thursday schedule. All these games are at home. All the favorites are playing at home tonight. So Boston's a 13-point favorite at home. Denver's a 10-point favorite at home. Phoenix, a 12.5-point favorite at home over the Kawhi and Paul George's Clippers. I've had a little more interest in Nuggets Timberwolves, but it hasn't felt quite as one-sided. I mean, you know, Denver's certainly controlled the series. I thought actually had a pretty good chance to win game four, thanks to some late game execution by the Timberwolves, but feels like Denver should be in a great spot here. But it's been nice to at least see the real version of Anthony Edwards, who, you know, really struggled in the play-in games, was bad in game one, but it started to look a little bit more like his old self over these last three.
Yeah, I think he's figured out the Nuggets defense a little bit, which has its holes. It has this tendency to be lazy. I think he's, you know, found where to pick his spots. When guys get switched onto him, he realizes that if he can get near the rim against Nikola Jokic, Jokic has absolutely zero chance to block his shot. I think that helps a lot. But the Wolves are going to be down Kyle Anderson, and that's tough because he is like legitimately their fifth best player right now.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is. Denver has been impressive. You know, I still have some major concerns about that bench, but I also have maybe even more concerns about the Phoenix bench. So I feel like that's not necessarily going to harm them in the next round. And, you know, even if it's, say, Golden State, you know, let's say Denver beats Phoenix and then they play the Warriors. Like none of these teams in the West really have a ton of depth that really concerns you. I mean, the Nuggets are plenty comfortable playing, you know, their top six or seven guys 35 to 40 minutes in those spots if they need to.
Ironically, the Clippers are the team with depth.
Yeah, right. But they have no stars now.
Right. That's a problem.
Yeah, well, let's talk Clippers Suns. Really fun series. It does feel like we're being robbed here. I think you got to tip your cap to Russ, one. I need to eat crow on that, man. I mean, Russ has looked like 2016 Westbrook. I mean, the efficiency has been there. I'm not shocked that he, you know, could put up 40 if he's taking 30 shots. Like, I don't think anybody thought that Westbrook was, like, you know, cooked athletically, but to do it as efficiently as he has, the three-point shooting is back, the confidence is back. It's been really fun to watch. And it really feels like if Kawhi or even Paul George is available for one of these last couple of games, we probably have a 2-2 series. I mean, I'm a little concerned that Phoenix has not looked more dominant given what's going on with the Clippers.
I think so. I think you're right to point that out. This could have easily went seven if Kawhi was available. Russ looks like a man possessed, and even more so on defense. In this series, he's got 7 blocks and 6 steals. His steals and blocks prop is 2.5 tonight. Like, he's been crazy, man. And Powell's look good too. Like, Powell stepped up, at least in game three, stepped up, played extremely well. I forget, we have like 35, 40 in that game.
Yeah, more than that. Even, I don't know what the final total was. It was, did he get to 40? 42 in game three.
Yeah, 42. It's tough to know how to evaluate this because it's just this team that they're throwing out there. What are we even looking at? It's a Russ-led team with Powell as the number two option. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of talk this week about, you know, Clippers postmortem. Like, they're not going to win this series, but I think what Russell Westbrook just in the last three games has completely changed, I think, the trajectory of his offseason. And he's unrestricted. It's not like a team is going to be signing him to a max or anything like that. But I mean, it went from a couple months ago. I mean, I said it on this pod. I'm like, I don't know if he's in the league next year. Like, what team is signing up for this? To now, there's definitely going to be teams interested. Now, what role are they going to be willing to hand over? I don't know. I think the league has gotten too smart where I don't think there's going to be a bunch of teams in the middle lining up to hand the keys to Russell Westbrook. I think there will be teams that saw what he's done in this series and even how he handled himself in LA. Like, it was a disaster with the Lakers, but chemistry wise, I think it could have been worse. And you know, I think he said all the right things. Like, there will be teams out there that are very interested in bringing him on maybe as a sixth man or, you know, even in kind of the role that we're seeing in LA.
Can I give you three teams and you tell me if I'm on the right track that may be interested in Russell Westbrook? Minnesota, Washington, Chicago.
Oh, man. Washington and Chicago for sure. I mean, those were obviously we've seen it already in Washington. And I think Chicago was one of those landing spots, after the buyout from Utah. People forget Russell Westbrook, ex-Utah Jazz. I don't know. Those are kind of the situations where I wouldn't want him to go because I don't feel like he moves the needle. Minnesota's a little more interesting. You know, if you could play him 25 to 30 minutes off the bench and he plays like he has for the Clippers, then I like that quite a bit. I want to say could Phoenix sign him to like the mid-level? I don't know. I don't think that's happening. Sacramento, that. Like, I'd rather see him on one of these, like a better team. Like, I don't think it makes sense for Washington or Chicago at this point. You know, I mean, you could say any like rebuilding team that doesn't have a key guy who you want, you know, being challenged for usage. Like, I wouldn't want to see him in Orlando, or I wouldn't want to see him in Detroit. You know, like from Kate Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. But you know, I think it has to be a team that just feels like it needs that bench spark. I don't know. Like, what about the Cavs?
Man, I cannot take touches away from Garland and Mitchell like that. I mean, maybe the Clippers just keep him. Maybe
I think that's most realistic by far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, what is the price? Like, if you're the Clippers, you know, I mean, it's easy for us to say, it's like, well, you know, Russ has enough money. He's signed multiple max deals. Yeah, that's true. But players typically aren't looking to take a discount. I have no idea what the cost will be. I really don't. And I'd have to dig in on what the Clippers can even afford at this point.
I mean, I'm taking a quick look, and it mostly looks like, I think Eric Gordon is partially guaranteed for next year, if I'm reading this right. Plumlee's off the books. They might be able to make it happen.
Eric Gordon, perpetually, partially guaranteed. He's been on the same contract for like 7 years.
23-24 is not guaranteed. They could maybe drop Eric Gordon, although I'm not sure you'd want to. You might be able to sign him to a deal as well. Mason Plumlee.
I mean, what are we doing with the Clippers here? I don't think it's realistic to expect it to play out any differently than it has this year, right? I mean, you load manage Kawhi as well as you possibly could. He looked amazing and still couldn't even make it past the second game of the first round of the playoffs. Like, what can you do to change that? I don't think there's anything. I mean, are you just hoping and praying every year? And you know, even when he's in there, I think you and I talked about this a while ago, like, things have changed since Kawhi and Paul George signed with the Clippers. Like, it's not like when they're healthy, they're automatically the team to beat. It's like when Paul George and Kawhi are healthy, they're one of the four or five best teams in the conference. So like, I don't think that risk reward is even worth it anymore.
Well, no, I mean, if PG turns 33 next year, how is Paul George older than Kawhi? Paul George is 33 next year. Kawhi Leonard's 32. I mean, I think this is ironically more so reason to sign Russell Westbrook. It's like, well, at least when these guys are out, we have Westbrook, who's going to keep the energy of the team up. But it's one of those situations where we heard quotes from Ty Lue where he's like, I don't even know what to do anymore, man. I'm coaching a different team every single night.
Seriously.
Everybody's in a tough spot. Ballmer's in a tough spot. Lue's in a tough spot. With the injuries that PG and Kawhi have had, I don't blame them for wanting to take off back-to-backs and three games and five nights rest situations. But it's one of those things where we can all say it's nobody's fault, or we can play the blame game, but it's just as a franchise, they have to sort of make a decision on whether they want to keep doing this or not. But they probably think if we keep doing this for the next 3 or 4 years, there's going to be a time where we make the NBA finals or we make the conference finals, and that's good enough for us.
Yeah, very true. It just feels like those opportunities are dwindling, right? I mean, the West is down this year, relatively speaking. I think this could have been their chance to make a run and take advantage of a Phoenix team that is obviously very good and is still the heavy favorite to emerge from the West. But I don't think they've looked quite as bulletproof as we thought they would. So, I mean, this is now, what, 3 or 4 years in a row of, well, you know, if everybody had stayed healthy, maybe we would have had a chance. But that's shocking, by the way, that Paul George is almost 33. That's like 2 years older than I would have guessed.
Yeah, same here. Did he play more than 1 year at college? Yeah, he did. 2 years at Fresno State. Okay.
Still, I mean, this is like a look yourself in the mirror moment. Like, wow. All right. He's just one of those guys that always felt like he's just going to be 25 forever. All right. Let's hit these other two series quickly. Knicks-Cavs. Fun series so far. Interesting series because like the Knicks have just not even played well, and it hasn't mattered because the Cavs can't do anything. Defensively, the Knicks have been fantastic. The Cavs scored literally the fewest points any team has scored all season in this series. They put up 79 in game three. They are now down 3-1. Cleveland's 5.5-point favorites at home tomorrow. I think pretty good chance to keep this thing alive and force a game six. But the Cavs just seemed overwhelmed in those two games at MSG.
It was a rock fight. It's what the Knicks wants, what Tibbs wants, it's what New York wants. They seemed overwhelmed. Yeah, I actually thought game four was relatively close to me. I didn't feel like the Cavs lost by 9. I didn't feel as bad about that. I kind of left game four thinking the Cavs should win game five. But yeah, it was weird because, you know, Mitchell in game one was he was shooting. He was taking too many shots. And then in game, you know, in game two, they let Garland go off. But I thought they needed Mitchell to go crazy in game four, and he wasn't able to do so. It's just bizarre. I mean, Cleveland's getting crushed on the offensive glass despite having Mobley and Allen there. And, you know, they're turning the ball over too much. It's like they're losing everything that isn't just pure shot making, essentially.
Yeah, it feels like they've been outcoached too in this series. And I think they've been exposed for a lack of depth that I think we knew was there.
Yes.
You know, it's not like it's not news that Caris LeVert has not been good in this series, or, you know, it's kind of been a rotation at small forward. That's a spot that they've been struggling to fill for years now. But, you know, if Donovan Mitchell is not like the guy that we've seen him to be in the playoffs over the years, and he's shooting 30% from three, 43% from the field in this series, like they need him to be 30 to 35 points every single night, because you just can't count on Mobley and Allen offensively. You can't count on Caris LeVert game to game. Like the only game that Cleveland's won in this series is the one where LeVert showed up, because beyond that, you know, it's very quickly you start getting into Jetty Osman, Okoro, Danny Green, who we've seen in this series, you know, Lamar Stevens. There was some start Dean Wade chatter. That's what it's come to for Cleveland.
Mobley's having a bad series.
He's been bad.
He's 48% for the field, 10 points a game. He's got three more turnovers than assists. His defense hasn't been spectacular. I mean, they're doing a good job of holding Julius Randle, but the fact that Julius Randle's having a crap series and you're down 3-1, like Randle's averaging 15 points a game, but it's 32% from the field Randle is down to, and you're now down 3-1. Like, how is that possible? I mean, he's got 14 turnovers and 9 assists. I mean, some of that is Mobley, obviously, but it's like, you know, they're sort of neutralizing each other, but then at that point, you feel like you had the talent advantage. Again, I think Cleveland's going to win game five, but it really feels like the Knicks are going to pull away with the series, which is, you know, I'm not saying anything bold. They're up 3-1.
I would say the only two players who've been like consistently good in every game for the Knicks are Josh Hart and Mitchell Robinson. You know, Randall's been bad. Like, he's been straight up bad for the entire series. You know, RJ Barrett was kind of the savior in game four. He played really well, but he's still shooting 41% for the series, 20% from three. Obviously, Jalen Brunson's fantastic, but he's shooting 28% from three in the series. It's not like he's been on fire. The rest of the numbers look really good. I mean, he's been their best player. I'm not saying he has it, but it has not been like an all-time Jalen Brunson. So, yeah, that certainly worries you if you're Cleveland. I think you look around and say, okay, we could definitely play better, but our opponent can play almost equally better. Like, we've both been bad, and they've somehow come ahead three times.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, Brunson, I think, has been the best player in the series. And just, if you're Donovan Mitchell, you can't let that happen. And Darius Garland, I think most people would say, is just as good as Jalen Brunson. I mean, maybe there's some New York bias where people would think Brunson's better, but the Cavs have two guys in the series that should be playing better than Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I would say Garland and Brunson are probably on the same level to me after this season. Going into the year, I think I would have taken Garland, but obviously Brunson's been fantastic. And yeah, Donovan Mitchell should be the best player in the series, and he has not been. That's just not been the case. Warriors-Kings, we get a little bit of a longer break here, so we'll get game five of that series tomorrow night. That's in the late window, 10 p.m. Eastern start. Golden State, 4-point favorites on the road. A lot of uncertainty as far as what's going on with De'Aaron Fox. Like, at first it was, he has a fractured finger, he's doubtful, sounds like he's not playing. And then there was a follow-up that, like, he's going to do everything he can to try to play. But I believe he's officially listed as doubtful, right?
Yeah, but wouldn't it shock you if he didn't play?
I feel the same way, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's a fracture of the tip of a finger, which feels like a minor injury. But obviously when it's I believe it's his left hand, right? So it's his dominant hand. And, you know, that's contacting the ball basically anytime you have it. I think, like, catching the ball is probably the main concern. But yeah, I would imagine that given where the Kings are in this series, given who they have behind him, which is like nobody, you're probably better off with De'Aaron Fox just like playing with a big rap on that. Even if he can't do anything but lay the ball up, I still think you want him out there. You at least want him to try.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's listed as doubtful. If he does not play, I will be legitimately shocked. Again, this is contrary to the injury report. I think De'Aaron Fox is playing in game five. It's just they. I mean, this is, first of all, this is an amazing series. This is such a fun series. The pace is super high. I love the sort of like old guard, nobody believes in us Warriors kind of a, not nobody believes in us, but you know, they had like such an up and down season coming up against this new Kings team. Like there's so many fun dynamics in this series, which is why it will suck if Fox doesn't play. And the Warriors, this series could basically be over. I mean, that's the thing too. Like this series could be over for the Warriors, because I think a more experienced team is maybe able to pull out that game three where the Warriors don't have Draymond. I know it's a back against the wall. Everybody rallies in game three, but game four was super close. And Steph almost, you know, kind of choked it away with the fake, the no timeout thing. So, you know, the series is tied up. I think like the scoring is basically even more or less in the series, but the Kings, it feels like the Warriors have the momentum, but weirdly enough, the Kings, it feels like they could have ended the series already.
Yeah, I think Sacramento, despite losing both games in Golden State, has to feel pretty good about how they come out of that. But obviously, the Fox injury changes everything. I'm with you. Again, I think he plays as well. You know, we talked about something similar with John Moran, you know, when he had that injury. And we essentially agreed that given who's behind John Moran, which is Tyus Jones, and the fact that the Grizzlies have a proven track record of still being really competitive without Ja, that it was worth it for them to sit him, get that wrist right, and then bring it back. And that's exactly what they did. And they won game two, and then Ja put up 45 in game three, and it kind of worked perfectly. But the Kings just don't have that luxury. It's like, yeah, Davion Mitchell, in theory, should be that guy, but he's a defender. You know, he's not a shooter. He doesn't give you anything close to what Fox has provided on offense, especially in a series where Sabonis has just been completely dormant, can't hang on to the ball. He's got 15 turnovers through four games. Like, who are your other options? Like, if Fox doesn't play, is Terrence Davis playing 30 minutes? Is PJ Dozier playing 25 minutes?
I think it's like 46 minutes of Malik Monk, and then you backfill with Davion Mitchell. And I think you said it. I mean, maybe you can. Keegan Murray had a nice game four. Keep him out there a little bit longer. And Terrence Davis has some nice spot minutes throughout the season. I think that's what they would do. But you don't feel great about that, obviously.
No, you do not. Did you see the tweet going around last night of like, you know, the implication was that the Warriors have caught like a major injury break in every year that they've made a run? Like 2015, Kyrie, Kevin Love get hurt in the finals. 2017, Kawhi Leonard gets hurt in the Western Conference Finals. 2018, Chris Paul gets hurt. Last year, Ja Morant got injured. And now this year, De'Aaron Fox.
I mean, I think you can say that that's true, but that they also deserve to win all of those.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like this was the most dominant team for a half decade, essentially, right. Like almost an NBA history. So again, maybe they have one more title than they should based on some injuries, but no, I'm not. People just want to point that out to point it out. Yeah. I think
you could do that for just about any team. The Kyrie and Love one, I think that one was big. That truly swung the series. I think the Cavs win that series if those guys, or even one of those guys, especially Kyrie, is available. But that was also 8 years ago. And, you know, the Warriors lost to Toronto in a finals where Kevin Durant snapped his Achilles and Klay Thompson tore his ACL. So, I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah, I think most of the time, I mean, maybe this is just what we tell ourselves, but I think most of the time guys end up with as many titles as they should have, and players end up with as many MVPs as they should. It all kind of comes out in the wash. And again, this team was absolutely absurd for a half decade.
All right, we'll end on this. We'll try to do this at least once a week as we go forward. Updated NBA Finals predictions. Who's there? Who wins? How many games?
Man, this is tough with the Bucks now. Yeah. Makes me want to lean towards the Celtics. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to do Celtics. I mean, I'm a little concerned about what I've seen from the Suns, but I think they have the potential to kind of snowball as the playoffs go along and get used to each other. I'm going to go Celtics-Suns now with this Bucks situation.
All right, I'm diving fully in. I'm going Celtics-Warriors. I think the Celtics are going to have just a really nice path here through the East, especially if Embiid's not ready. That series, if Embiid's hampered at all, if he misses one or two games, that the Sixers aren't competing. If he's healthy, You know, that one maybe becomes a little dicier, but either way, I think if you're not a believer in Milwaukee getting past Miami, then Boston should have a really nice path back to the finals. And I think Golden State is in great shape too. I think they'll take care of the Kings. I think they will beat the Lakers in five. And, you know, then it comes down to what to me would be a, at that point, you know, you have to assume Golden State has kind of proven that they've gotten past whatever made them basically a 500 team in the regular season. And I would view that as close to a 50-50 series, given all the experience that the Warriors have against either the one seed Nuggets or the team that I still think is the best team in the West, the Phoenix Suns, but hasn't quite proven it.
Well, this Warriors still haven't proven that they can win a road game in the playoffs.
That is true. That is true. They have not done that. So, yeah, I mean, that worries me. But I think, you know, if they had to get through, like, let's say they were playing Phoenix in the next round and then Denver in the West Finals or vice versa, I don't think I would take them. But I really think they're going to be in a great spot to exploit this Lakers team. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think the Lakers have anybody to guard Steph. I don't know that the Lakers can shoot the ball well enough consistently. I think Anthony Davis is going to get beat up by Kevon Looney. Like, the Lakers actually played the Warriors well during the regular season, for what it's worth. But I think that's a matchup that Golden State would be licking its chops for.
I think so, too.
All right, man. Once again, this is like the fourth reminder of the show, but make sure you listen to us on the RotoWire NBA show Monday through Friday, 7 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern over on SiriusXM NBA Radio, Channel 86. We will be there later tonight. We'll be there tomorrow. We'll see if we have games on Thursday. If all three favorites win tonight, that will be a day off collectively for the NBA. But we will have games Friday and, of course, going into the weekend as well. So looking forward to breaking those down, and we'll talk soon, Alex.